an exceptional personality who is in Krishna consciousness for the last 30 years or so, and who also happens to be a brilliant scientist. So let us welcome this afternoon for the Sunday Feast program, His Grace Rasraj Prabhu, in our traditional manner by loudly chanting, Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! I would like to share with you briefly his bio data for your pleasure. So while working in USA, in the USA, after his master's in electronic engineering, Rasraj Prabhu came in touch with ISKCON in the summer of 1979 in Detroit, USA, and moved to the temple as a full-time devotee in just a few months. He subsequently also obtained a PhD degree on foundations of quantum physics. His main service is as the director of Bhaktivedanta Institute in Mumbai and Berkeley, and also he is also the director of the recently formed Institute for Semantic Information Sciences and Technology at Berkeley and Mumbai. The BI Institute in Mumbai conducts the world's first MS PhD program in consciousness studies, an interdisciplinary scientific program in collaboration with the Birla Institute of Technology and Science, Pilani. He is an adjunct professor of BITS, Pilani. He is also the temple president of ISKCON, Berkeley, USA, famous for Srila Prabhupada conducting the first Sri Jagannath Rath Yatra outside India. At the BI, he has received international recognition from Nobel laureates and other scientists for his original work in developing a new area of physics called macroscopic quantum mechanics. In this field, he is developing a new concept of matter within science that is directly based on the notion of five elements in Bhagavad Sankhya, with five elements characterized as carrying objective semantic information. He has many research publications in peer-reviewed journals and in international conferences. He has lectured both on science and Bhagavad Gita throughout the world. So we have a wonderful blend of science and Krishna consciousness in His Grace Rasraj Prabhu. And he has offered that those who are interested in the scientific work of Bhaktivedanta Institute under his direction can interact with him after his lecture today. So once again, I would like to welcome you here in our midst, and would like to show our appreciation for your presence by loudly chanting, Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Thank you. Krishna ni bhagavan.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Can we have? Should I speak from Bhagavad Gita or just shoot from the hips, as they say? Okay. So that's fine. I want it. Ah. Okay. We'll start now. While he's trying to bring this up. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevayam. Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, contents of this Gita summarized, text 13. Dehino asmin dehe yatha kaumaram yavanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra na muhyati dehino asmin yata dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tata dehantara prapti diras tatra na muhyati. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Please repeat. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly, the soul passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Purport. Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, sometimes as an old man. Yet the same spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. This individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body. And since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering, according to one's work in life. So Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in heavenly bodies for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause for lamentation. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a dhira, or a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies. The Mayavadi theory of oneness, the impersonalist theory of oneness of the spirit soul, cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the supreme cleavable or changeable, against the principle of the supreme soul being unchangeable. As confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the supreme exist eternally, sanatana, and are called kshara. That is, they have a tendency to fall into the material nature. These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same. Where is that from? Started? We put the Veda base? The fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. The theory of reflection can be applied to the super soul who is present in each and every individual body and is known as Paramatma. is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in the water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities and the sun or the moon to the Supreme Lord. The individual fragmental soul is represented by Arjuna and the Supreme Soul is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. They are not on the same level as it will be apparent in the beginning of the fourth chapter. Thank you. If Arjuna is on the same level with Krishna and Krishna is not superior to Arjuna, then the relationship of instructor and instructed becomes meaningless. If both of them are deluded by illusory energy, Maya, then there is no need of one being the instructor and the other the instructed. Such instruction would be useless because in the clutches of Maya, no one can be authoritative instructor. Under the circumstances, it is admitted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, superior in position to the living entity Arjuna, who is a forgotten soul deluded by Maya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamini. I didn't do Jairada Madhava, we'll do at the end. Just now I realized this, all this thing. I'm a fool. Should I stop talking? So thank you very much for inviting me to speak in glorification of Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srila Prabhupada and Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. It's a honor to be invited to be here amongst all of you. So thank you very much. Of course, in the olden days, we didn't have the Chaupati temple. And most of the devotees, they used to go to Mahaprabhu's house for the meetings. We used to have meetings in Car Road. And he used to always affectionately invite me there. And I see some old faces from those times, that is back in early 80s. We all together did 1986, a big conference on synthesis of science and religion. 4-day festival we had. We had about 6 Nobel laureates and 30 international speakers. Dalai Lama was there. Srinathji was our leader on the organizational front, and everybody, Dr. Radhakrishna Prabhu was also a major contributor to organizing, helping organizing the conference. I don't know whether Radhakrishna Prabhu is here now. Like that. So I have a lot of pleasant old memories with all the beautiful devotees here. From that time, slowly, slowly, progressing in Krishna consciousness, we come to slowly realize what is it that we do not know. See? At least that has been my journey. Now with every passing day I am becoming more clear that I know nothing. That whatever I thought I knew is just an illusion. That of course is a natural progression. That doesn't mean we didn't know anything. And, you know, but that's the way spiritual knowledge progresses. Just like all of you, before you read Srila Prabhupada's books, we were all leading different lives. And then we understood, oh, there is God, and I'm a spirit soul, and my actual relationship is with God, and I've forgotten that. And instead of serving Him, I'm serving in the material world, my senses, and I'm suffering. This is a common message in all religions. And once you understand it in a very spiritual way, then you realize, oh, whatever I'm doing was nonsense. It was useless. But still, it is not useless in the sense that it leads to your next understanding. Because the souls are evolving. spiritually. Prabhupada used to say, evolution is not wrong, but Darwin thought that the bodies were evolving, but actually the soul is evolving. Prabhupada said that in the city, there are so many apartments, and if you are not very rich, you will be in a one-bedroom apartment. And if you have more money, you may go to a three-bedroom apartment. If you have a lot of money, you may go to a bungalow, like that. So it is a person who is evolving. It is not that the one-bedroom apartment will evolve into a three-bedroom and then into a bungalow, like that. So, Srila Prabhupada said that Darwin misunderstood evolution. The world is meant for the evolution of our consciousness, but he thought it was evolving our body. Of course, we are evolving through various bodies, but the bodies are all present. But that of course is a religious view, that God created the world. Every religion has that idea. However, Prabhupada's genius was not one-dimensional. So, you know, if you, in the Veda base, if you put life come from life, Prabhupada will say many places, what is this Darwin? Let's kick him on the face. How can from chemicals life can come? Right? But, this is not my laptop. Huh? But all my quotations are there. No, PPT is not so much important. It has got bookmarks. Is there any way you can copy those bookmarks into this? Veda-based bookmarks, that would be good if you can figure a way to. Go to their help and see whether download bookmarks. So, anyway. Thing I have to spend my life finding all these things. Remove this Bhagavad Gita, please. I have everything there. I prepared everything and brought it here. See, I have to find, and the Veda base is such, and it has such a syntactic inquiry mode that unless you know exactly. Yeah, I found it. So, can you read this or should I make it bigger? How do you make it bigger? Mister, how do you make this bigger? You can read, Mahaprabhu?
No,
yeah, so I want to make this view. Can you see it now? Yes or no?
Yes.
So, but now, oops. So hit list, let's go here. And See? So Prabhupada spoke so much against scientists, but here he's saying the modern theory, it starts from here. The modern theory that life comes from matter is to some extent supported in this verse. You see? The Prabhupada is so precise. So we may think that Prabhupada only said that, but Prabhupada also is saying this. Now how are we to understand that, you see? So Prabhupada's books are very valuable because they're written by a person who is spiritually perfect. I'm not spiritually perfect. And of course Srila Prabhupada said that he can repeat what I said, but we don't know what we are repeating. Prabhupada gave the example, if that a child is hearing from the father, this is a microphone, and he tells somebody else it's a microphone, what he says is perfect. But we should also remember from this example that the child does not know what he's saying. Because if the other person says, oh, wonderful, it's a microphone, what does it do? The child has to say, I don't know, I'll have to ask my father. And then father says, okay, you say that the microphone amplifies sound, and he goes and repeats. Then he says, oh, what does amplifying mean? How does it do? Oh, I don't know. I have to go to my father. And if the child starts to give explanation, that will be rubbish. So my position, you know, of course you are all very advanced, but as far as I am concerned, I am understanding as I am going along that actually Prabhupada in this example is politely pointing out to me that I am a fool. In other words, he says, you can repeat what I say, but only I know what you are saying. You don't know. Oh, I didn't know that. And it makes sense, later on I thought. Of course, I can't go and say, you know, I don't know any singing, but, you know, all I can do is if Bhimsen Joshi sings, I can only repeat it. What? You can repeat what Bhimsen Joshi sings, then you are another Bhimsen Joshi. So, you can't just repeat what he says. So I'm realizing slowly, I can't even repeat what Srila Prabhupada is saying. All other devotees are also good, they can, but I can't. I'm a fool number one. You see? So the Srila Prabhupada's books are, you know, very carefully to be read and understood and appreciated. And the more we do that, the more effectively we can distribute it. Of course, Srila Prabhupada's books, if you try to distribute, it's guaranteed that it will succeed because Krishna wants it. Srila Prabhupada said that when we preach, the other person can understand what we are giving if and only if Paramatma wants him to understand. So when Prabhupada is preaching, why was he becoming so successful, so super? Because Krishna wanted people to understand his message. So he is making them understand. For I preach, there is a hope that if I just repeat, even if I without understanding, then perhaps people will understand. And you can see this, that book distributors, they will always report miracles. How, you know, we distribute books and it happens. I remember I used to be a full-time book distributor. I joined in Detroit Temple. I was very attached to Prabhupada's books because by reading Prabhupada's books only, I came to Krishna consciousness like all of us, all of you. And I had not even met a devotee until I finished four cantos. I didn't even know there was a movement. I was already chanting and following the principles because it said in the books. And I was, I think, working at GM at the time, and I used to preach at work also, but I didn't know this was a movement, and you know, there were people. I didn't even know that. You see? And so I used to be a book distributor. But I remember one incident. In 82, I came to Chennai temple, and in the morning at Guru Puja time, one person came in a suit. So we were after the thing, the temple president went to him and said, oh, Prabhu, please give the class. And then he sat in the Vyasa and gave a class. And I was thinking, oh, who is he in a suit and he's giving class? I didn't know. I was, first time I was coming to India. And it turned out to be, Naji Das, now Sri Naji Das. So, then he produced from his pocket a small Russian Bhagavad Gita. And he said, this is the only copy I have. It has just now been printed. I'll have to tell this to him, you'll remember too. And then he said that I just kept one back and it's going. And, you know, Naji Prabhu knows, I'm sure he has recounted those things. And they had a surreptitious way of getting all the books into Russia and, you know, selling them. And that was the first time Russian books were being sold. You see? So there was only one. But it turned out that was the day throughout the world ISKCON was going to go to the local Russian consulate and register a protest, you know, for because, you know, the devotees were all being put in Russian, you know, camps and all that. That was in 82. We have two Russian devotees from the BI in here, Bombay, Yajna Prabhu and Mother here, and Mother Irina. And, and the devotees were being tortured in Siberian camps, and so there was going to be a local protest. So in each place, they were being brought. We were supposed to, on a coordinated way, every temple, local temple, will go to the local Russian consulate and give a letter of protest. So we had been planning that. Now, of course, I always say, we have temples everywhere in the world, you know, and Hindus also have temples. Hindu temples are there. But we say the difference is that in Hindu temples, if you go in America, you will see only Indian priests there. One Indian priest will be there. But Prabhupada was so great that if you go to America, you'll get American priests, and if you go to China, you'll get Chinese priests. Isn't it? And you go to England, you'll get English priests, like that. You know, that's a unique achievement of Prabhupada. Except in those days in India, where you didn't have Indian priests. We had Italian priests at that time in Chennai. Indians were not joining. There were barely few Indians joining, you know. I remember when I joined in America, my mother called me. She called me with my sister and said, we heard that you joined the Hare Krishnas. I said, yeah. But they drink and they smoke drugs. We have heard. I said, but that I can do outside. I don't have to go there. I said, not only I can do, I was doing. I said, you are never worried at that time. Now I have gone to your temple, you are calling me, you are so worried. I told my mother. So Indians were not coming at that time. So in Chennai, there was only Italian devotees. And Bengali, some few Bengali devotees, but mostly Italian devotees were there. So they didn't speak not only Tamil, they didn't speak English also. So I happened to land there from Detroit. I was a Tamilian, so they said, no, you should go, you should be in the front. Even though I was a very junior brahmachari devotee. Okay, I said, fine. So life members and all were brought. And this is a real story. And Naji Prabhu, after breakfast, he flew. And somehow the president said, you keep this Russian Gita in your, pocket. I don't know for what reason he said it, and I just put it in my pocket, and then we went there, and we went to a Russian embassy. It was a building in the end of a street, which was the cul-de-sac, dead end. So it's like a spy house, and there were no windows, nothing. There was only walls and a door painted in the color of the wall, so that you can't even find where the entrance is. It was communist time, and so we did kirtan, and then the police said, okay, you can do only kirtan for 5 minutes, after that everything has to be quiet, and it has been arranged that we will bring the thing and they will receive the protest, the consul general. So then they finally sent me. So I went inside and stood in front of the door. I was a little bitty fellow there, and they opened the door and I went inside. There was a big sofa. I sat there, and after a few minutes one person came out. He was a very important-looking person, and he was like 6 feet wide, Russian, big Russian, and he was He said, well, did you bring this letter? He asked me. I said, yes. He said, okay, okay. And he kind of shook my hand, and you know, my hand was going like that. Oh, my God. Then he gave a polite handshake, according to him, but you know, my whole body was shaking. Then he said, come on, come on, you come with me. And he said, so I went through so many labyrinth, you know. I was worried now whether I'll be able to come back, you know. It was so like that. Then I finally went and put Consul General, and he opened the door. I mean, this is a real story, yeah? So I went inside, and he was the Consul General. He had personally come to receive me. So then I went inside, and there was a reason. And he closed the door, and he said, sit down, in Russian accent. I sat down. Then I took from my thing, one brahmachari bag I had, I pulled out the letter. I said, we want to officially register. I was told how to be very officious. I used, and he cut me. No, 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 he said. This letter is not going to go anywhere. He said, nobody is going to read it. He said, anyway, I will put it in our diplomatic pouch, it will go. He said, but, he said, tomorrow is my last day. I'm going back to Russia, I said. And I have always wanted, see, KGB agents are always with me. I wanted to buy a Bhagavad Gita in India. I never could do it. He said, do you have a Bhagavad Gita? He said. I said, wow, do I have a Bhagavad Gita? Of course I do. I said, not only I do, sir, I said, it's in Russian. And he took it. Oh, it's in Russian. I said, yes. Thank you. And he just put it inside the thing. He said, don't tell anybody about this. And he said, okay, okay. And then he just, you know, I came on. And I was very amazed. And I was thinking, this person was so intent on buying a Bhagavad Gita, and he must be really, really sincere. And Krishna arranged it on the last day. See, Naji wanted to send everything back. He said, but I wanted to keep one book. And that one book, he left it in Chennai because he heard that we were going on a protest march. And the president somehow, Italian president said, you keep it. And I kept it and I go. And this guy is going the next day. And Krishna fulfilled his desire. It's just amazing. You see? Amazing. So, Srila Prabhupada once said, you know, Prabhashi used to tell me, senior devotee, you all may not know from, he was in Detroit with me, that he told, Prabhashi once told me that Prabhupada said, that if you travel throughout India, in many Vaishnava ashrams you'll find Mayavadis, and in many Mayavadis ashrams you'll find Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas are always everywhere. Vaishnavas are always there everywhere. We cannot say who is a devotee of God. Only God knows. We may think I'm a devotee. In Krishna's book, we will be evaluated, marked differently. I have my friend Ismail with me, and you know, I was just narrating. There's another true story which happened. Which is that when we were doing this 1986 Congress, I came down to Air India in order to you know, book tickets for all these people, these foreign delegates and all that. And the booking clerk said something we were doing. She said it'll take 2-3 hours. If you want, you can come back. I said, okay. And I came out of Air India. And so, by the way, I used to work in Air India along with Ismail Kurwa. So, I used to work in that building. Anyway, I came out. And in the Nariman Point, there are those concrete benches. So, I wanted to go and sit there and chant. And so, I was going towards one book bench. And I saw, when I got close, that there was a Muslim priest sitting there. Priest because he was in Muslim robes and you could clearly see that he was a priest. So I came so clear, close, and he also saw me and I was in my robes and I realized if I now turn and go to another bench, it will be very rude. So he can't do that. So I said, I better, you know. Then I went and I sat next to him. And he was not from India, you could see that. And I said, hello. He said, hello. And he said, where are you from? He said, I'm from Saudi Arabia. I said, oh, Where? He said, I'm from Mecca. Oh, you are from Mecca. Said, are you a priest? He said, yes. Where? He said, in Mecca. I said, in the temple? He said, in the mosque? He said, yes. He said, our family is 500 years priest there. You know. So I knew I was speaking to somebody who was a very pious religious, was coming from them. So I said, can I ask you some questions about Allah? And he said, yes. Then I asked him, is it true that in Quran it is said that Allah sits on a golden throne in the kingdom of, you know, in his kingdom? He said, yes. I said, how can Allah not have a form and sit on a golden throne? Then he said, well, we interpret it like this. And he started, I said, but why interpret? I said. Then I asked him, do you think you can enjoy if you don't have a body? He said, no. Or I asked him, I think, can you enjoy more if you have a body or if you don't have a body? He said, I can enjoy more if I have a body. Then he said, then I asked him, then Allah has given all of us bodies, why he cannot have a body? Why can't Allah enjoy? I said, what sin has Allah committed that he cannot enjoy but only we can enjoy? I was a young boy, you know, okay. But he was much older than me. I was a very polite gentleman, he was. So, the conversation went very politely and it was not exactly like this. It went very politely and I liked him a lot. He was a very nice person and, you know, he was very peaceful. And he was a little amused. Now, he was about 60 and I was barely in my 20s. So, he was also a little amused that one young boy is spiritedly talking to him. He said, okay. Then, you know, we had some discussion. Then suddenly, I don't know how I said that. I must be a crazy fellow. This whole idea came to me just like that. The words came out of my mouth. I didn't plan it. I was not that intelligent. So I suddenly said, oh, what would you say if I show you a picture of Allah? He said, what? I said, a picture of Allah. I said. He said, show me. I really wish I could meet him again now or something. Anyway, he has always been in my thoughts since. Then he said, show me a picture. Then I had a BTG in my pocket. And that had that Bhagavad Gita standard picture, Arjuna on the chariot and Krishna blowing the conch. You know? So I pointed to Krishna and I said, that's Allah, I said. And I said, now, I said, you have to tell me according to Quran, not according to your own opinion. You have to quote me Quran and tell me why this cannot be Allah. What is it in Quran that this conflicts? And you know, he was looking at it. And this is also a true story. I was looking at it. And after a few minutes, he asked me, how much? No, this is applause for him, not for me. Because he is a real lover of Allah. You see, because then I said, I think 5 rupees in those days, whatever. I just lug out some figure. And he paid me and he took it. He didn't even look at any inside page. You see? It is not possible. Isn't there a lover of God? There's no other way. So he is the lover of God. Now I wish I could be like that. That if I was born in some other religion, and of course many devotees are from so many religions. So the point is that different religions are like colleges. And, you know, these colleges, when we meet, we don't say, oh, I'm from Madras, I'm Madras University, I'm Bombay University, we don't say. I'm a doctor. You're a doctor. It doesn't matter from which university we are, we can discuss about. So the love of God is a common topic. It doesn't matter. Religions are like colleges and we come. So we have to learn if somebody knows more than us. It doesn't matter from which religion he is. And if we are preaching, then we should actually know we know more. We should not also. Prabhupada said we are not like United Postal Service. You see, post office, he sends a parcel, postman delivers. Of course, Prabhupada said we are like postmen too. But if you ask the postman, oh, thank you for bringing the parcel, what is inside? You'll say, I don't know. You open it and see. Now, we can't say the same thing when we sell books. If people say, what is inside the book? We can't say, I don't know. You read it. That would be silly. So, we can't be like parcel service. And so, sometimes using common sense, we can preach. I mean, I've done that. That's what I mean. That's what I'm slowly coming to. Why is it that I started slowly realizing I don't know anything? Because on a sunny day, I can turn a trick or two too. And, you know, I've also preached. And, you know, you might find many people who might say, oh, I became a devotee because I heard Rasraj speak, which is not possible because I have not become a devotee. You know, maybe I've taken up the process. But don't blame me for that. You know. In any case, so... But that is the people also, you know, appreciate. It just happens. I remember once I was coming from London to Bombay, and next to me was sitting one Indian, young Indian fellow. For some time I asked him, what do you do? And then I had a small Bhagavad Gita, and I was reading portable Gita. And then he said, I'm a professor of civil engineering from where's University of Toronto. Oh, okay. So I just spoke to him a little bit, and then I started reading, you know. After some time he said, you know, I'm going to India because I'm going to publish my guru's Bhagavad Gita, he said. I said, okay, that's very good, he said. Then he gave some Ananda something, some Mayavadi name. And he said, you know, because that time laser printer had just then come. This was a long time ago, PCs and then laser. So I have lasers printed everything. He said, this is a master copy. Would you like to take a look and read it? I have to be polite. I said, okay. So I started reading. Then I looked through some pages. Okay, it was usual Mayavadi ideas. You know, you are God, I am God, everybody is God. So I closed it and gave it to him. He said, how was it? I said, it was okay. But it is not authentic, I said. He was very shocked. So, why do you say that? And he was a little sullen. So after some time I said, you are a professor of civil engineering, right? He said, yes. So you must have done some good work in your PhD or after PhD to be a professor. I said, yeah, I've done some original work. There are some theorems in my name. I said, or some design procedure in my name. No, that procedure, did you invent from scratch or you developed based on other people's ideas? No, people before me had worked and I developed it further. So in your papers, do you refer to those people or you just write your ideas? No. I have to refer to the previous people who worked. And in the bibliography, it must be there. Isn't it? Correct. That's a scientific way of doing. Then, I said, so if you want to write a commentary on Bhagavad Gita, who spoke Bhagavad Gita first? He said, Krishna spoke. I said, so should you refer to Krishna or not? He said, yes, of course, you have to refer to Krishna. Suppose somebody writes a Bhagavad Gita without mentioning Krishna alone, what happens? So he said, then that cannot be accepted. That's not proper. And I took a big risk. This is a real risk I took. Krishna only saved me. So I told him, open any page of your Bhagavad Gita and count how many references to Krishna are there. Right? And he opened and looked. In that page, nothing. I randomly opened. There was no Krishna, of course. Maximum they'll say the Lord, Supreme Lord. Then he opened another one. Nothing. Opened another page. Nothing. Went back. Nothing. This actually happened. There's no... Then, I gave him my pocket Bhagavad Gita, as it is. I told, you open any page and count the number of Krishnas. And he opened 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I said, now, who is actually presenting Krishna's words? He was pretty shocked. No, he was an academic man, so he can't say anything. And after some time, same thing happened. He kept quiet. And after about 15 minutes, he said, how much is that? So I said, okay, fine. Okay, so you see. You know. But still, you see, we must understand Prabhupada's books deeply. I mean, we have. What I'm saying is that we have, all of us have all this type of. I remember in 82 when I was in Chennai, I went to one Sanskrit college, Vivekananda College I went to the Sanskrit department to distribute Bhagavad Gita. And then, you know, I was, you know, of course, they gave me this topic to speak on the amazing potency of Prabhupada's books or whatever it is, as if I'm qualified, but then that has never stopped me that I'm not qualified, so I agreed to speak. So the point is that, and then there was one Sanskrit professor, Tamil fellow, you know, with some, you know, Tamil Brahmin, and he was saying, ha, you know, all Bhagavad Gita means you have to just self-realization, that's all, there's nothing else, he said. There's nothing to know about Krishna and all that. Vedaisya sarvair ahameva vedyo, he said. Of all the Vedas, the self is to be known. Ahameva vedyo means the self is to be known, that's all. I was shocked. I said, I didn't even know that one can interpret like that. Because we read Prabhupada's books and he says, Vedaisya sarvair ahameva vedyo means of all the religious literatures, I am to be known, I am God is to be known. And now he's saying aham means self. I didn't know what to do. Then I was praying to Prabhupada. He's a Sanskrit scholar, you know, what do I know? And I was a young kid at that time. Then Krishna, you know, and Prabhupada gave me a good idea, so I told him. But next line says, Vedanta krit vedavit eva cha aham. So did you make Vedanta? And he got caught now, because that aham cannot be you know. So then the first aham also cannot be you, I said. Then you are saying, not bad. Then, not bad, okay. So, you know, Prabhupada said, okay, is this... In other words, he realized that, okay, Prabhupada's followers are not fools. But the point I'm saying is that we should not, however, think that Prabhupada's books are limited. They're unlimited. We should always be very, very conscious of it. So if scientists are to actually now, we are going to present Bhagavad Gita, what will you do? You can't go to the scientists and say, people generally in the ISKCON, we have an idea that BI is meant for defeating scientists. Yeah, but defeating scientists by doing what? I mean, if you are playing tennis and I say, I want to defeat you, I have to play tennis better than you. I can't say, let us go and play football and I'll win and then I've defeated you in tennis. No. So if you want to defeat scientists, you have to do better science than them. Correct? There's no other way it can be accepted. You can't say, we'll talk about soul and God. Scientists will say, we are not interested in that. But scientists will say that. Actually, the scientists are not the target of Bhaktivedanta Institute preaching. That people don't know. You see? Exactly like if you are building a temple, you cannot actually build a temple without the help of the karmis who can donate money to you. 1:10. We go up to 2 o'clock, isn't it? That's what they said. So I have to keep... Oh, really? But anyway, well, right now you are saying like that. After some time you may not say that, so. He said you can go up to 3. That's good, you are saying it now, but you have to write and give me, you know. There is a story of Ramanujacharya. This is a commercial break. And then I come back to the main movie after some time. So, there's a story of, I just remembered when he said writing, many of you may have heard of this. Ramanujacharya once, he was sitting in Kanchipuram, and he went to the Varadaraja temple as usual for the noon puja. And when he neared the temple, he realized, I have not brought milk, I wanted to offer milk abhishek today to the Lord. Then he told his disciple, okay, get some milk from the milk woman. And he ran, the disciple went there, and the milk woman gave, come, quick, our acharya wants to go, it's 12 o'clock. Okay. Paramjaya went, did all abhishek, everything. Of course, the temple, his acharya, it was received well, and everything was done, and he was coming out. And when he was coming out, he told the disciple, okay, go and pay that, palkari, dudwali, some paisa. So he went. Remember, this is 1,000 years ago. And he went and he said, how much milk? She said, I'm not going to take money from the acharya. So take it, it's free. So he ran back and told Ramanujacharya, she doesn't want any money. In my understanding, I think Ramanujacharya was definitely having some fun. He knew what was going to happen. So anyway, so Ramanujacharya said, what? He said, then she will get all the credit for the abhishek. So that's not allowed. You better go and tell her that she has to take some money, because I want to get the credit for doing the abhishek. So he ran and he said, no, our acharya said you will take all the credit, so he wants the credit, you better take some money. Again the milk woman, no, I'm not going to take any money. So he said, no, I can't go back and tell that, you have to take something. And you see, what transcendent, acharya must have known she's a pure devotee. What transcendental intelligence you had. I don't think I would have had that intelligence. She said, all right, then ask him to give me a little chit of paper saying that when I die, I should go to Vaikuntha. That I should be admitted in Vaikuntha. And he came and said that. That's all she will take, nothing else. So Ramanujacharya came and said, all right, give me a piece of paper. Of course, in those days it was just that palm thing or something. And there's, if you go inside Vardaraja temple, there's a beautiful painting of Ramanujacharya writing. So he wrote in that, please admit one in Vaikuntha. And gave it to her. And this Palkari milk woman, she kept it in her. That's all. She kept it throughout her life. And when she passed on, the whole Kanchipuram witnessed a golden temple coming from Vaikuntha and taking her. So that's a faith, people, we should have. That is not an ordinary faith. It is not a result of some mundane logic and reasoning. It comes from past experiences. From past experiences it happens. We are all coming to, we are not the only pious people in the world. There are so many religions, everybody is pious. But so many people are not pious. How does it happen? Piety comes due to past life. That's what is. That's fine. You see, piety comes from past lives. Now, what happens if somebody doesn't believe in past life? Like? That is the whole thing. Now we're coming, because this verse is saying. So, and Prabhupada always said, reincarnation is a science. When Prabhupada said, it's not religion. Because Krishna is saying, from youth, boyhood to youth to old age. And nobody can say, only Hindus are becoming youth to old age. It's only applicable to Hindus. I'm a Christian, we don't get from childhood to youth to old age. No. You see? Prabhupada said that. So, this is a science. What's the sound? What? So, no, it's okay. Let's just go on. So, Prabhupada said it's a science. So we're going to get to that. This is the question, and I just want to show how we can penetrate a little bit. I don't want to claim that now I have understood scientifically what's reincarnation. Far from it. I'm a fool. But we can make inroads by Prabhupada's mercy. And these books are very deep. I just want to show that. So, where was I before the commercial break? Huh? Yeah. So, Yeah, you have to defeat, you have to know more science. For that, you have to know what is science. To understand what is science is not so easy. It took me a long time. I also did B.Tech, M.Tech and all, but I didn't know any science. It's only when I started working in B.A. under Prabhupada's guidance that I learned science. Whatever science I know in modern science is from Prabhupada. I didn't know that. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. I'm myself thinking, wow, I never, even I was thinking like that before, that the B.A. is meant for, you know, defeating scientists. No. So I was giving the example, like if you want to build a new temple in a town, your budget is 5 crores. Where will it come from? We have to collect it from those who are interested in collecting money and have collected money. We can't say, no, no, I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm depending on Krishna. We are not Madhavendra Puri that, you know, temple president says we're going to build a new temple and in the night Krishna comes in the dream and says, there's a suitcase on the altar, you know, I've kept 2 crores. And combination is 367. No, it's not going to say that. We have to go and beg. That's our humility. We have to beg and make money. So similarly, if you want to understand the science of Krishna consciousness, you see, scientists will help. They are not enemies. Just as you cannot understand, we cannot build a temple without the help of people who have money. It is not possible for us to understand the science of Bhagavatam without the help of people who know science. But the people who know science are very few. There are many PhDs, many, they are not everybody is a scientist. Just like not everybody who uses a TV is an electronics engineer. You can use a TV without being an electronics engineer. You can drive a car without being an automobile engineer. The same way, you can do science without being a scientist. So who is a scientist? You see? The scientist, you know, this is the second, I mean, post-interval movie now. All the tragedy and seriousness is there. Comedy is over. I'm joking. So the point is, who is the scientist? The scientist is a person who understands that my experience of reality is different from reality. Are you following this? This is the most general definition of science that's useful. For example, if you ask a scientist, this is a table. Of course, this is one is a spirit table, spiritual entity, but let's say, well, let's go outside and we show a table and we say, this is a table. It's a rigid object. Scientists would say, no, that's how it appears to your experience, but it's actually a collection of atoms that are vibrating about their mean position. Say like that. So a scientist is actually seeing behind the veil of experience, he's seeing differently. Similarly, a devotee is supposed to be a scientist in the sense that he doesn't see things the way they are. Then what does he see? He knows that behind this there is Krishna. Stavara jangama deke na deke tara murti. The devotee is seeing not the creation but the creator. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am, you know, Vasudevam sarvamiti, samahatmas. One who knows that everything is Vasudeva. Of course, we may say, no, it is Vasudeva's energy. No, it is Vasudeva simultaneously. There is Vasudeva and there is matter. Both is there. That is Achintya Bheda Bheda. Just like you see this electricity. This electricity, you can explain how is it bulb is bright. Now you can simply explain it by saying there is current coming in a resistor and it's, you know, thermionic emission is there and, you know, they emit some light and the light is in the visible spectrum and then you see it. That's a scientific explanation. But a little deeper scientific explanation, which even scientists accept, is, but that electricity is produced. How? In an electricity turbine, the turbine is moving. And the turbine is moving because of steam, and the steam is coming from water heated. The water is heated by coal, and the coal has got heating capacity because it has been in the sun and it has been dried. So the original energy for this light is coming from sun. And then there is sun also. Understanding the sun. Like that, if you want to understand how the world is, scientists can give just some material explanations. But a deeper science is to know that all this is actually energy coming from Krishna. And then there is Krishna. All the three are simultaneously present. Right here. Even if you remove all the sunlight, bulb lights, you will still see some sunlight coming through the window. So there is sunlight here, there is bulb light, and there is sun. And we can't make the distinction. So we must understand behind our experience, all these three are simultaneously present. Matter that is independent of Krishna. Some scientists can see it like that. And matter that's coming from Krishna, that's the neophyte devotees can take that. It's coming, we just believe that. And Mahabhagavat, who actually sees it's coming from Krishna, and he sees Krishna also. God. So God and God's material energy and matter. That is why Krishna says matter is my separated energy. Bina prakriti. It appears independent of Krishna. But actually, you can understand. So to understand this matter is quite important. And I learned that. In other words, Krishna consciousness means you have to realize, if I tell people that Krishna consciousness means you have to realize Krishna, they will accept it. If I say you have to realize soul, yes, that's also part of Krishna consciousness. But if I said you have to realize matter, they'll say, what? That's not part of Krishna consciousness. No, it is. In fact, in this very verse that we were discussing, where is that Bhagavad Gita, please? In this very verse we are speaking, Prabhupada says here, I don't know how many of you noted it, I read it twice, that sentence. Neha Vikramana Shusti Pratyavayo Navidyati. Come on, Maya, Dira, Kshara, Supreme Lord, Maya. Yes, Prabhupada says, any man who has, this in this very purport, but you might have missed it. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called Dhira. So you have to understand matter. In fact, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, understanding of Bhagavad Gita entails understanding God, soul, time, and prakriti, matter. So there is something called realizing matter. It is not only that we say it's Krishna's energy, it is not only we say use it in Krishna's service, but we have to realize it. There is something called matter realization. In fact, it is a first step. Because that's what we are immersed in, matter. If you can't see Krishna here, this may look very surprising. This may look very surprising. But let me try to see whether, just give me a few minutes, I'll try to get this. So what am I going to do? F2?
No, I want to do a Veda base, yeah.
So, is there a book, Krishna Consciousness, the Topmost Yoga System? See, I can never find this quotes. This Veda-based search is very unintelligent. We need some such better search engine for Veda-based. Huh? Does anyone have Krishna Consciousness, the Topmost Yoga System? you will never find it. Huh? Really? Oops, see? Where is it? Yeah. Pretty good, Mataji, thank you. Come on, what is this? How do you do this? Okay. Yeah. Here is a quote from Srila Prabhupada, Krishna Consciousness, Topmost Yoga System. Krishna says that out of many millions of people, one may understand him. But by chanting of this Hare Krishna as introduced by Lord Chaitanya, chanting and dancing, you can understand Krishna within a very short time. You see? Very simple, Prabhupada says. It's very difficult to understand Krishna, but you chant and dance. And then Prabhupada puts, knowledge begins. Can somebody read? I didn't hear. Surprising or not? It is called Acharya. So we have to read Prabhupada's books very carefully. Because he also said, this he says there also, in this purport, but we missed it. Prabhupada said, you have to understand soul, Paramatma and matter. So knowledge, where does knowledge begin from then? If you are chanting and dancing, you will know Krishna, but Prabhupada says, but is missed. Knowledge begins not from Krishna. What are we going to do? Oh. So let us see what Prabhupada says. Knowledge begins not from Krishna, but from things which you are accustomed to see every day. Did you know this? Surprising or not? Huh? Yeah. So Prabhupada says, when you chant and dance, you will understand what's around you. Surprising or not? We thought that by chanting and dancing, we will know Krishna, means I will know Krishna. Because we do not know that we have not seen matter. We don't know that. Suppose, can you just pick up some material object in front of you, sir? Any material object you see. Is this a material object? You agree? This is not a material object. You see? Surprise. So if we don't want to be UPS parcel service in distributing Prabhupada's books, a little bit. What is the time now? 2:25, they said 2:30. I thought it was near 2 o'clock. No, we'll have to go a little bit more. 2:30, 2:45, they said. But I have to the show is a little longer than that. So, and then Prabhupada goes on to describe. Land is gross, if you touch it, you can feel its hardness. And then he goes on. Fire, electricity, air is fire. Beyond air, there's mind and it's filled finer. So many elements people have discovered, so many sciences. There are many scientists, who study biology. Then he talks about electronics. You'll find all that. Prabhupada is writing for 2 pages on this. In other words, he's not just... So what is this? Accustomed to seeing things around us. So, I just want to give you some little idea about this. This requires a separate lecture, but at least if you want to understand reincarnation, first of all, we have to understand something. And what is that? At least that's what I have found. And if you like it, okay. If you don't like it, just forget it. But if you have to throw something, at least throw some hot samosas, not stones, at the end of the class. Okay. So, you see, in the 7th chapter, Krishna says, I shall now tell you both phenomenal and noumenal, by understanding which you can understand everything. You remember? Jnana Vijnana Sahitam. Asheshataha. So what is phenomenal? What is noumenal? Do you know, sir? Do you know those words? But you have read that verse, right? In Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter. Isn't it? You have read? Do you know what's noumenal? Then, how we can understand? So one thing I realized is that Prabhupada's books are not written in English. I thought they were written in English and I was reading and also explaining before. It is like, for example, you see a mathematics book. It appears to be written in English, but by English professor cannot understand it. Open a book, it will say, let's say it's a book on Hilbert space, and it says Hilbert space is a normed vector space which is complete. What does it mean, complete? It's not an English word. I always said that complete means it actually all the Cauchy sequences converge. Oh? Why didn't you say that? Well, that's what I meant when I said complete. Oh, it looks like English language, but it's a technical language. Similarly, all these purports look like English, but they are a science. Now, what is that science? It's the science of bhakti. So we should not think Prabhupada was just saying bhakti is a science. It's actually a science, and if we don't know that science, we cannot understand. So the very first point, and the scientists, so how do scientists believe that there is something behind reality that is different? We'll come to that. Because 400 years ago, when science began, it's like another 15, 20 minutes, but is it boring? Should I continue or stop? Oh, thank you. Otherwise, I'm a little worried, and I'm always worried. Because I do this 24/7. There's nothing else. Nothing else. For 30 years, I've done, believe me. Nothing else. Standing, sitting, walking, Krishna says, right? Taking shower, going to Mangalarti, eating prasadam, sleeping. This is all I've done. I had to because Prabhupada said he must do it. Yes, sir. No questions asked. Yes, we'll do it. I didn't know. I didn't even know that there was a field called quantum physics before I joined. Did you know that? You should know. Huh? I did not know. But now, you know, I'll show you. I'm solving. They're saying I'm solving a problem they couldn't solve. That is a surprise to me also. Now got a fool like me, I have become like this. You know, it's a surprise to me. So, 400 years ago, there was a guy called Descartes. He is considered the father of modern philosophy. He is also one of the early modern mathematicians. A pure mathematician. From him, you know, all your algebra, x coordinate, x1, y1, all this geometry he created. He, at the time, people were thinking the Christian religion was dominant, and it was said that knowledge can be obtained only from scriptures, which the religious fellows say all the time. And we also would say, but we can't become fools in the process. You see? So science has mounted a real challenge that we have to meet. So then he was thinking that why should I depend on scriptures? Let me go on what are called empirical facts, observable facts. Right? What is indubitably true, namely that this is a material object. He said that this is indubitably true. I will build my knowledge only from such things that nobody can challenge. He was thinking. And he said, after a little reflection, there is no such thing. He realized. A clever theologian priest, Taklu, can easily trip me up. He can show that, okay, you think we are reading scriptures and simply doing armchair philosophy. But when you think you are observing in the world, you are also, everything is in your head, nothing is in the world. He recognized that. How did he recognize that? And Descartes actually wrote that God made him write this. It must be true, because you will see in a moment. I'll say something about Srila Prabhupada. We are going to connect this all to Prabhupada's book at the end. It's going to be a suspense ending, so it's going to be nice. So it's worth waiting for the ending. So the point is that he said that suppose I say that I see a red clip or whatever it is. What color is this? Pink?
Orange.
Saffron. So let's say that I see a saffron clip, you know, here. He said that it is obvious that I'm not seeing the clip. I'm only seeing the light reflected from the clip. Then he said it's also obvious I'm not seeing the light because the light is making a pattern in my eye and all I'm seeing is what's in my eye. So when I say I see a clip, I am looking here, not there. Then he realized that even that I am not looking, because from the retinal image, signals are going to my brain. Assuming he had one, right? Then he said that when I say I see a clip, I am referring to my neurons firing. Then he said, but I'm not even experiencing the neurons firing, I'm just having an experience. So he realized that when I say that I see a clip, I mean what I see in my head, my experience. Is this point clear? So the clip I see is somewhere in me, not in the world. So how do I know what is out there? I may think that I saw a black cat, but it may turn out to be my rumpled black sweater. There is always, I may see that I saw a castle, it may just be particles in the sky. So error is possible. How do I know everything is not an error? So he said that everything can be doubted. He said, my God, how is knowledge possible? You see? So since then, the Western scientists and philosophers have come up with this idea that this is a phenomenal clip. It's not a real clip that exists independent of me. Now you can't say, well, I can touch it. No, touch is same as vision. You are as removed from the object when you touch it as you are when you see it. This is Bhagavad Sankhya, but it is very difficult to understand, but I'll try to explain it a little later. But just take it for granted. So, there is a phenomenal clip and whatever is behind it is called noumenal. Now, scientists have found, and I won't explain this, and I'll request a separate lecture. Even physicists have come to accept that science can only deal with phenomena, not noumena. And many religious, pious people, they believe in noumena, God and soul and angels, ghosts, but they don't know how to connect it to phenomena. You say God is there, can you show a necessary consequence of God in experience? People have not shown. So some people know phenomena, some people know noumena. But Krishna wants us to know both. But we don't even know what they are. How are we going to know both? Okay. So then scientists said that noumena is what we want to understand. Do you see? So they developed a method from going from experience to noumena, and they found the noumena was different from as it's presented to the senses phenomena. This is the credit. So they developed actually a whole thing, which is going in a direction that we are not even aware of. Practically none of us. Very few people will be aware of. So what is the direction in which science is going? I'm going to say something. So do you know what is the first book that Srila Prabhupada wrote? Is it Journey to Other Planets? I mean, those who know the answer to the next question from Bombay BA or something, don't answer. Do you all know, it is his first book that he wrote in Dada Damodar Temple. Do we know to whom did Srila Prabhupada dedicate that book, his first book? Do you know?
No.
Do you know? Guess who you would have dedicated it to. First book. If you had to guess, who would you say? His spiritual master. Which is? His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Right? He didn't. His very first book, he dedicated. It's not that he didn't dedicate, and he didn't dedicate it to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. To who did he dedicate? Huh? Krishna? No. Huh? Not just, he dedicated, I mean, you dedicate a book to some people who have done something very important for you. And he said, he dedicated it to the scientists of the world. Very first book. Just try to understand. Acharya, he's not writing one word lightly. With the blessings of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Saraswati Thakur, he said, this book is dedicated to the scientists of the world. What is that? That means they must be doing something very valuable for him. What is this valuable thing? So now we come to this verse, Dehino Aspinyata Dehe. How to actually get at the soul. When the body is going from childhood to youth to old age, which is that body that is changing? Phenomenal or noumenal? Phenomenal. We have to know, correct? First, because that's what we have access to. So this phenomenal body is changing like that. Correct? So behind that body, what is unchanging? Wrong. If you say that, then you have not understood. Soul, what is soul? We'll come to that. Now what are you going to do? We are thinking like, oh, behind the changing body, the unchanging thing is soul. Prabhu, no. No. This is a good answer. Who gave that answer? Subtle body, he said. That's better. Definitely better. No, that is also wrong. So it's not soul. It's not. That means that light you see in the samsara diorama, which is unchanging while the body is changing, that's not necessarily the soul. It could also be the subtle body, because the same subtle body goes from one gross body to another. But there is something else which remains unchanging. What is that? We will see in a moment. No. Don't even try to answer it. We'll get to that in a moment. So to introduce this, I don't think we can get at this. Remember I said that with the help of scientists, we can understand the material science and Bhagavad Gita. So philosophers have a problem. That problem is known as the problem of replacement by parts. It will take about 2-3 minutes. At the end of this is going to be something very interesting and nice for all of you. I'm sorry, I always assume that whatever I speak, you're not. See, I can give a straight Bhagavad Gita lecture also. Okay, I started like that. We can go on. And people have also said, nah, that's not good. Nice. But I think people may not be interested, but you're all interested. So the problem of replacement by parts is the following. Please, listen carefully. The philosophers came up with the idea, suppose I have a car, and let us say this car is made of 100 parts. How many? 100. I'm just wanting to make sure that you're not sleeping. So, now, they said that suppose I change one part. Let us say I change one wheel. And you say, oh, Rasraj, you have a new car. I'll say, no, it's not a new car, it's the same car. Correct? Suppose I change one wheel and I repaint it, and you say it's a new car. I'll say, no, it's the same car. So philosophers wanted to know, what do I mean by same car? At what point? Because if I change all the 100 parts, I'm sure we will all agree it's a different car. But if I change one part, it's not a different car. If I change two parts, it's not a different car. At what point it's a different car? They want to know where. So this is known as problem of replacement by parts, one by one. And it is also known as the bald man paradox. If you have no hair, you are bald. If you had one hair, it doesn't make a difference. You are still bald. But if I keep on adding one hair, at some time I am no longer bald. So they want to know, when do you go from bald to not bald, or not bald to bald? This is a problem. It's also known as pauper's paradox. If you had no money, you are a pauper. If you have only one paisa, it doesn't change. But if I keep on giving you paisa, then you may become a crorepati. So at what point, which number of paisa you are not a pauper, below which you are a pauper, above them? This problem they have, right? Now I'm going to propose a solution to this, which is coming from quantum physics. I've come from the direction of quantum physics, which Prabhupada taught me personally. I have to say that because I'm a fool. The actual quantum mechanics. So, the solution is like this. Right? You say, the collision is very simple. If something has got 100 parts, and this problem is also for the body, for the table also. If a table has got 4 legs and one thing, and if I just only change one leg, you might say, it's still the same table, I changed one leg. Same problem. Body also same thing. If you change one hand, I'm still the same. It's still the same body. If you change two hands, at some point it becomes another body. So it looks like not only soul is not changing. When the phenomenal body is changing, there is a body itself which is not changing, a gross body. Oh, how is it? Such a thing exists or what? You see? So, and it's the same thing about tree too. So, the point is that if you have 100 parts and if you change one part, it's the same car. Now, you can change any one part. It doesn't have to be this part or that part. So, if I can change this part, it's still the same car. This is not part of defining what the car is. But since I can change any one part and it will still be the same car, none of the parts define what is a car. So, although a car is made of all the parts, it's not the car. The car is different from this. You can say the same thing about a tree. A tree is made of, you know, branches and leaves and flowers, but the tree itself is not this. You can say the same thing about the body. Although the body seems to be made of so many parts, lungs, you know, bones and legs, the body itself is not this. Right? Then what is that? Now, you might say, well, it's all very interesting, but Prabhupada never preached like this. I mean, Rasaraj is always, you know, word juggler, you know, he's just doing all these things. It's nice to hear, okay, Prabhu, we are ready to concede, you know. You got some good idea and you're doing it fine, but why don't you keep it to yourself? Can't you just give a lecture on Bhagavad Gita? Isn't it? See, I don't want to do all this searching here, but unfortunately that thing is not working. So this is, hold on. Here is Narada Muni instructing Vyasadev, and this is Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.20. And Narada Muni says, the Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead is Himself this cosmos, and still He is aloof from it. From Him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In Him it rests, and unto Him it enters after annihilation. Your good self knows all about this. I have given only a synopsis. That means Narada Muni is saying, I'm just giving a synopsis. So there must be much more to it than what He has said. And Vedavyas has all the background, so no problem. So Prabhupada giving purport. So Prabhupada should say something more than what the purport verse says. Let us see whether he does that. For a pure devotee, the conception of Mukunda, Lord Sri Krishna, is both personal and impersonal. The impersonal cosmic situation is also Mukunda because it is the emanation of the energy of Mukunda. For example, a tree is a complete... So okay, before we go to this, we go, see, Prabhupada says, first pure devotee, some things are coming from Krishna, but Krishna himself is different from everything. We know all that. I have also given nice lectures, and I said, you know, if I speak and you record it in a tape recorder, and if it's played, if people ask who is speaking, I'll say it is Rasaraj speaking, you will say, but I may be at that time sleeping. So it's my voice, but it's my separated voice. But now when I'm speaking, this is my own voice. And then I am different from both. Like that, Krishna, matter is coming from Krishna, it's separated energy. Spirit or chit is his internal energy. But Krishna is different from both. Oh, wonderful, you know. But I didn't know the following thing. Therefore, I didn't know I was a fool. But I was saying that. But Prabhupada then says, how to understand it? Prabhupada says, for example, a tree is a complete unit, whereas the leaves and the branches of the tree are emanated parts and parcels of the tree. The leaves and branches of the tree are also the tree, but the tree itself is neither the leaves nor the branches. So Prabhupada is writing, and he's just mentioning it and going on. But if we want to understand, why, we have to really, if we didn't know the problem of parts. So therefore, when Prabhupada is talking about the body, he makes a distinction between the phenomenal body and the noumenal body. The noumenal body, which we don't see, is matter. This body is experience. Because it's part of your experience. Touch, smell, taste, everything. Therefore, this is not matter. this is experience, and as such it is not different from consciousness. So Prabhupada, I have a beautiful quote, unfortunately I have so many quotes, that Prabhupada says in another place, Revatinandan Swami. Revatinandan Swami says, of course, you know, we are not the bodies. Prabhupada says, that's all right. Prabhupada says, that's all right, Prabhupada says. Actually, you cannot make that distinction. There's no difference between matter and spirit. But for public, we say this is matter, that is spirit. But there is a higher understanding. I wanted to show that quote. But just take it from me, it is there. So Prabhupada is saying that. So, all you are seeing is only phenomenal world. Now, do you think Krishna created the noumenal world or phenomenal world? But if it has to be one, which it would be? Which it would be? Huh? Noumenal world. Right? Because phenomenal world is what we experience. Noumenal is what exists independent of our experience. So, Krishna will create what? Noumenal world, it appears. But if you do a search, you know, you will never see that. You will always see, let me put, phenomenal world? This cursor just jumps everywhere. Why, is it an ecstasy or what? Huh? Come on, how come? Is this to be, whose laptop is this? I want to complete it, just. No, Prabhu. See? You'll see. In every inquisitive mind, the important question of the creation of the phenomenal world. You'll never see Prabhupada saying noumenal world. What we experience is created. In other words, when we say we are not the, I mean, this is the science of reincarnation beginning. I'm not even coming to that. That has to be another lecture. Science of reincarnation, if you want to prove reincarnation is a science, independent of religion, you have to first understand that the word I am not the body refers to subtle body. Because you can have a subtle body in the material world and not a gross body. Ghosts are like that. Therefore, I am not the body first applies to the subtle body, and it means I am not the experience. So if I am not the experience, then what? So the experience happens independent of you. A soul is not needed for experience. So you are mistaking it to be your experience, but actually it's external to you. Just like an audience is not needed for a movie to be run. But if the audience were not there, movie will not be run. But they are not the cause of the movie being run. So you are not the cause of this experience. But if you are not coming to the material world, this experience won't come. Krishna creates the world of experience for us because we want some particular, we have some desires. But this experience is not created by me. Experience exists independent of the soul. This is the beginning of Bhagavad Sankhya. And in order to understand that, we should know that phenomenal body and noumenal body are different. And last point, and I'll stop here. So, this noumenal body is there. You see, this problem was anyway, this point size I cannot increase, but I'll just read it. You just hear this. Where is the slideshow, Prabhu? Left side. I'm getting old. Okay. So here is this, there is a theory in physics called quantum theory and has got problems. What are these problems? So, I've taken for 100 years Nobel laureates in quantum physics who got Nobel Prize for quantum theory are saying we don't understand the theory. Here is Einstein in 1919. Y H bar, the possibility for knowing the answer within my lifetime grows dimmer with every passing day. He says, here is Max Born, Nobel laureate, 1930. At present, this theory is more intelligent than us. It knows why it works, we don't. You know, there is no doubt, Max Planck, 1935, there is no doubt that the stage that quantum physics has reached is beyond the grasp of even its creators. Feynman, 1965, no one understands quantum mechanics. Nobody knows how it can be like that. See, let us try to appreciate their honesty. They are actually, they are God, but they say in front of nature, which is God for them, that we don't understand. They have no problem accepting it. Will we accept that I don't know what is a soul when we preach? I'm a fool? No. Do we accept that I don't know what is a body? It looks like it's more deep than what I thought. No, I've ignored this point of Krishna, phenomenal and noumenal. No. So you see, so we should be humble like them. Scientists are not fools, you know. They are fools by Prabhupada's standard, you know, but not by my standard. I can't call them fools. Quantum theory, that strange thing we all know how to use but understand very little. In other words, if you ask me why they are getting quantum Nobel Prize, because they are actually able to use this theory like we use a car, but we don't know how a car is designed and works. They are also become technicians in quantum theory. Why the quantum, after 100 years, we still do not know? Wheeler in 2000, you see. But a new idea that we have brought to this theory after 100 years. 100 years, Nobel laureates have said that we don't understand. And, well, let's, this one. This just keeps going and jumping. It's so ecstatic, this computer is. Whose computer is that? It's a Mahabhagavat laptop. Prabhu, how do you change the font size? Here. So, here is an appreciation of a new idea. I was very interested in the talk by Dr. Ravi Gomatam last night, that is my legal name, because he showed by some nice arguments that the proper way to think of quantum mechanics is in terms of relationships. That the language of quantum mechanics is perhaps the language of relationships. This is a new way of thinking. Right? So now I have to delete. I don't know how to do it. I'm just doing it. This is a new way of thinking. It may be that this is how we should be doing science. He's saying. Now, who is that? That's Professor Brian Josephson, Nobel laureate in quantum physics. He's also a Nobel laureate in quantum physics. And he also knows the problems are there. And he's saying, we could do this. So that means we presented based on Bhagavatam an idea that scientists immediately accept. See, that they're looking for truth. So the point is that in this quantum theory, which is applicable to the macroscopic world, just not to atoms, they have found out that behind this object, it's another science, everyday objects, there is a reality which is different from even tables and chairs that we see. That's why Prabhupada said, knowledge begins not from Krishna, but by understanding things around us. That understanding is not simple, it's very deep and it's very scientific. So in other words, if you want to understand what is reincarnation, to which I have not even gone now, we have to. It's a change of bodies, change of phenomenal bodies. So what is that noumenal body that's behind the phenomenal body? We have to understand. So sometimes I jokingly say, in the human form of life, when will I obtain my bodily consciousness? Before Krishna consciousness, when will I understand there is a body? So this work we are doing, and it turns out that that body which is behind the phenomenal body, the noumenal body, is the one that's made out of five elements. And it is a big science. I have to explain so many things more. So I just wanted to share with you that it has been an exciting discovery, journey of discovery for us in BI doing this work. And we have introduced a new notion in science called objective semantic information that is different from the idea of mass and energy that scientists have used. That's really at the basis of it. And from this, as science is going to be developed, which will become the basis for Varnashrama Dharma. It's not a simple thing. And this science will be so environment friendly that not only will it not produce pollution, global warming, but whatever has been produced can be undone. And it is going to be a major... So, there are three things we have to understand. Prabhupada said four things. God, soul, time and matter. So this understanding of matter, which we all require, is being brought in with the help of scientists. Just like we build a temple with the help of karmis. We don't have to feel bad. So they give money, but it is meant for everybody, including devotees. And of course, you might say, this is so difficult, we cannot think like that. You don't have to. Just like if an engineer wants to build a TV, everybody cannot build one. They cannot even understand. But once they build it, everyone understand what is a TV and use it. So in the beginning, this is a very difficult job, but we are doing it with Prabhupada's mercy. And when it is done, all of you can understand. Not only you, everybody in the world. And it is very important because people's faith in the Kali Yuga, it is in things that are beyond the senses, is limited to what material science can say. It's limited to what material science can say. So, through science, we have to bring it. So, one very important quote from Prabhupada. You go to F2 and you do, what was that course that I was saying? Here it is. See, Prabhupada is, it's an amazing quote. If this Mahabhagavat cursor will stop dancing. Prabhupada, this is an excerpt from a conversation in Vedabase, so they don't have the previous thing. So Prabhupada, therefore his teachings, and because his is capitalized, we can assume it's Krishna, crude teachings. Of course, Prabhupada means, as far as I say, see, simple. One of the meanings of crude. So Prabhupada says Krishna is teaching simply, cannot be now applied to the modern advanced educated people. That was suitable for those people. Now people have advanced in science and in philosophy. Now God consciousness should be presented on the basis of science and philosophy. Otherwise people will not accept. So don't think this is... And what is the danger? Because the scientists are coming to this idea that there are two kinds of material tables here. One made of parts. And another one which is not made of parts. The quantum table. They are coming to the understanding that there are two bodies here. One that's made of parts that doctors operate on. And another body that is different from parts. The quantum body. It is there. They are coming to that. If they break through this idea in science, you know what they will say? They will say, you know, these religious fellows, they were not bad. They actually understood that behind this ordinary table, there is something that's unchanging. They understood that behind this body, changing body, there is unchanging. But they foolishly thought it's some soul, but we now know it's quantum body. So they'll tell you, you're all fools, but we found it in science and we can manipulate it. That challenge is, it'll sink our preaching. Compared to Big Bang and evolution and all, there is nothing. Because you didn't even know that there was a body behind this body and they are going to manipulate. If I explain what kind of manipulation can be done with that, you'll be amazed. And we are on a race on this against scientists. But if we find it first, what we can say, we can tell them, you know, you guys say there is no soul behind the changing thing. But you don't know that behind the changing body, there is a body. And our scriptures have said that. So, and then we solve a problem that you have not solved in science. And if you accept that, that is there, and then you can go further to solve. So, the same thing. See, Krishna, God creates the world in two ways. It serves two purposes. the same world, because it's so complicated, the atheist says, there can be no God, this world is so complicated. And the theist says, oh, it's so complicated, it could not have come from nature, there must be God. See, so Krishna accommodates everybody, both atheists and theists. It is voluntary. So the same quantum mechanical puzzle, if they take it, it will actually establish atheism on such a strong footing that we'll be finished. But if we come up with it, then there is a chance. So how much we must be running for this? How much the movement should be really saying, hey, let's put all the energy into this. But the problem is, most people don't know what I'm doing. And if they know, they think, oh, it's some nonsense. Or Asra just become fool, contaminated. He just is captured by matter. But Prabhupada is, you know, we have to understand all this. But anyway, this is far more things are there. I've just indicated a little bit. So, the concluding point is that Srila Prabhupada's books are amazing, not only because of their spiritual potency, and Krishna wants them to be distributed so that when we go to distribute, there's so many miracles happening, but they're also amazing because of their content. Very scientific. If I show you more ideas about science, you see. Prabhupada says, so last quote. Of course, Prabhupada means base. In all of his books, yes. So this is, yes, you know, it's a beautiful verse. I should speak on this one day. The activities and characteristics, third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, 26:34. The activities and characteristics of the ethereal element can be observed as accommodation for the room for the external and internal existences of all living entities, namely the field of activities of the vital air, the senses and the mind. Purport. Prabhupada writes in the purport. This purport is superb. To explain this, it will take a long time. I know. But then Prabhupada, this is the only place in all his books he wrote that. This verse is the potential basis of great scientific research work. In other words, how did he know that? And the entire work I'm doing that the Nobel laureate appreciated is coming out of this internal and external existence. Let me just explain it. Your external existence is that you are just a body. Your internal existence is you are somebody. What's your name, Prabhu? So let me get a little purified by vibrating your name. Akinchana, Krishna Prabhu. So his internal existence is that he is Akinchana Krishna Prabhu. Right? Now, this thing has got external existence. It has got some length, width, mass and all that. But it has an internal existence called paperclip. And this verse is saying space contains both. The internal and external existence of living entities. Prabhupada, how did he translate so precisely? In other words, it's not just, see here once again. Otherwise, you could never understand the meaning of this. What is internal? I'm sure some of you have read it and wondered. What is the internal and existence of space, right? Prabhupada is saying, that internal existence Prabhupada knows because he translates correctly and says this is the basis of scientific research because we are bringing it inside quantum theory. Like that, I can go deeper and deeper into this. So Prabhupada's books are amazing because they are not written in English. If we read it in English and explain, it's okay. But if we read it in the scientific language and explain, it'll be even better. That's all my message. This work we are doing, I think we brought some scientific publications. If anybody wants to get, Raja Hamsa is there. Where are the publications? You can stand up. You can stand up. You'll be famous. This is Raja Hamsa Prabhu. He is also a PhD in chemistry. Yeah. So he'll bring it and we'll take some questions. And if any one of you want to know about our work, you can come to the second floor of the Juhu Bhaktivedanta Institute. So it is not that we are trying to defeat science. It's not we are trying to show scientists are fools. But scientists are the ones who have developed a method by which you can go behind experience, which is very suitable for this modern age. So whatever they may be doing, atom bomb and this and that pollution, that's going on. But Krishna is actually using them to do something that's going to be used by Lord Chaitanya for
That's why in my, I would say Prabhupada has dedicated it. Because they've all actually prepared the most important thing, because Prabhupada said this scientific preaching is my most important work. So I tried to share with you a little bit of what I've been doing. We'll stop here. Any questions? Just a couple of questions, not too many. Yes. Announce your name and then it's on.
Hare Krishna, Brajmohandas. Brajmohandas.
Brajmohandas.
What is the problem which you are trying to solve which they could not solve? Something.
You have to. Me give another lecture. That way, you know, I can book a, make my booking for the next one. No, it takes a long time. Long. I don't want to attempt it now. I can explain to you separately or something. The reincarnation itself, the next time we will talk about the science of reincarnation. What it is. Why is it a science? Any other questions? Yes.
Law of attraction under quantum physics.
Yes.
Which says that if suppose we have a some good thoughts are there, then automatically good thoughts will, you will attract some good thoughts. And if suppose you have some bad thoughts in your mind, then bad thoughts will get attracted. So there is one book of Secret written by Rhonda Byrne, which says about quantum physics. So I was trying to relate your...
There are a lot of people who write rubbish about quantum theory.
So I've read a lot because I was trying to
rubbish.
Relate with that
whatever
spirituality.
Said is. So let's not waste our time on this.
Right.
This is not at that level. Some parable and, you know, this is hard science. Right. You understand? We are actually, you know, defining psi function not in Hilbert space of the kind that some mathematicians have done in another mathematical space. So I mean, we're not joking here. This is for real men. It's not for children or women. It's for real men. You understand? So, no, don't even bring. Just like we know practically every other Bhagavad Gita is useless unless it's written by acharyas. There are few books on quantum mechanics that make sense. Practically all the textbooks are rubbish. They give a wrong presentation of it. It'll all get established soon. And all popular books are undoubtedly rubbish. And all books that connect quantum mechanics to mind and consciousness, bigger rubbish, like that it's there. You know what I'm saying? So let's not even... Now, I want to take up his thing because there's one point come up to me. It's a very stunning point for me. And I just got this realization today morning, so it's hot off the, you know, oven. So I'll say that. This is the point, Prabhu. This is the point. In quantum mechanics, if you apply it to the macroscopic world, that is to the world of big objects, not just to atoms, quantum theory requires that an object must exist but should have no properties. But normally, how can an object exist without properties? You understand? Plus, quantum mechanics says this object should have properties only in a, what is called a measurement. That is in relation to another measuring device. Right? Now, what scientists have done all this time, remember, this is going to be very important. What scientists have done all this time is to think of matter in terms of properties that are independent of the environment. In other words, if you have this object, it has got certain length, certain weight, it will have all this regardless of whether other objects exist and other subjects exist. You follow? This is called primary properties, mass, velocity, acceleration, temperature. That's how science was done. Now, we know that if you say it's a nice clip, that property it cannot have except in relation to you. I may disagree with it. So, there are called subjective properties in relation to conscious observers. Then there are some properties that this object cannot have except in relation to other objects. For example, if you say it's a paperweight. It cannot be a paperweight until it actually is sitting on top of a stack of papers. By itself, it can never be a paperweight unless a relationship with another object is established. So, what we are bringing in, the one that the Nobel laureate appreciated, the idea of relationships is, that so a material object can exist by itself and may have no properties if it is thought in terms of only relational properties. You follow?
relational properties in relation to other objects. So that will solve quantum mechanics and lead to science and technology. Okay, fine. Now the beautiful bottom line is, in other words, what we are saying is that certain properties in this world cannot exist for material objects. Some they will have by themselves, whether anybody else exists or not. But some properties it will have only in relation to other objects. Right? And then something it will have only in relation to other persons. Like that you are actually his brother. That it cannot be in relation to other objects, in relation to other persons. And some things cannot exist except in relation to God. We will show that. In other words, we will show that mass, velocity, everything will exist in the object independent of everything else. But objective semantic informational properties can exist only in relation to other objects. You being a person, husband or wife or friend or whatever it is will be in relation to other subjects. But you having consciousness, it is possible only in relation to God. If you don't have a relation with God, you are not conscious. We are dead. Whatever we think we have consciousness, that is produced by the mind. It's not consciousness. Even the I is not consciousness. It's false ego. So if you want to get your consciousness, what does it have to be? Krishna consciousness. That's the point. So that we cannot actually have consciousness unless we relate to God. Isn't that amazing? So this entire process, Prabhupada said, is the arousal of our spiritual existence. Your consciousness will be aroused if you do actually bhakti or devotion to God. Did I answer your question? That's the large thing. But if you want to know what exactly I'm doing in science, then I'm showing that, you know, the collapse of the wave function is not necessary. That the superposed wave function, even at the point of observation, doesn't collapse. But that's too much. So, we'll stop here because I think it's very late. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada's books ki. Srila Prabhupada's scientific preaching mission ki. Gaur Premanandi. Jai.